Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the government shutdown ends for now, just as flyers began to feel the real effects at East Coast airports.
Mark spent Friday at the New York Times Travel Show, one of the biggest in the country, and starting at 3:20, he has a variety of great interviews to share with us.
We start with a company which makes lightweight travel backpacks. Just about everyone has a backpack for their daily travel gear these days.
And after the news at 3:25, we take you to the San Juan Islands, Provincetown, and then off to Tahiti.
Tom, did you know the Pilgrim's first stop in North America wasn't Plymouth? It was actually at Provincetown, out on the Cape.
Great place to visit, I understand, and here with lots of information, specifically to make you a smarter traveler. That's what we do. You're listening to the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Travel Guys is on the air, and we are at travelguysradio.com. You can follow along and get links to all of what we talk about there. And if for any reason you happen to be out of the area and you'd like to either get a podcast or listen to the radio program, you can do it at travelguysradio.com or, for that matter, iHeartRadio. Welcome. We are brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. I'm Tom. I'm in the studio right not too far from Cal Expo. And Mark, boy, you're pretty close to about as far away as you can get. I know you were in New York for a brief time. We're going to talk more about that in a while. But we find you in Key Largo.
Yes, sir. In 24 hours, I have doubled my temperature. my outside temperature, for sure. Yes, sir. Coming to you live from Key Largo, where we almost had a beautiful sunset tonight, but some clouds rolled in at the last minute. So a group of Sports Leisure travelers are over across the street at the Fish House having a wonderful dinner. If you ever come down to Key Largo, I strongly recommend that the Fish House be a culinary stop for you. And as soon as this program is over, my friend, I'm going to go over there and join them.
Outstanding. So, you know, this is not the first time Sports Leisure Vacationers have made their way into the Florida area. Besides Key Largo, what other areas do you guys visit?
Well, you know, Tom, it's kind of interesting. You can't sell Florida to people from California, really, because what does Florida have? Well, it has sunshine. It has Disney World. It has ocean. Those would all be things that pretty much California has. It also has humidity, which is something that California doesn't have. So really, to sell Florida to people from California, you've got to have something really unique and different. And so that's what this particular trip, which we do once a year, is all about. Folks flew into Fort Lauderdale yesterday, and where I flew in from New York and met them. And then today we went to a little tour of Miami and out to do an airboat ride in the Everglades. And for folks who are from this part of the country, you've probably done an airboat ride by the time you're 8 or 9 years old. But if you live on the West Coast, that's not necessarily something that gets onto your agenda. So folks, I find that folks really enjoy going out into the Everglades and getting a chance to see some alligators and in their natural habitat. So we're here tonight and then down for 4 nights in Key West before heading for home next Friday afternoon.
Outstanding. Well, look, we'll talk more about Key Largo and what you're up to a little later on in the program. But as we always do at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on what's going on in the travel news. Mark, what you got?
Well, as I'm sure everybody is aware now, on Friday afternoon, the president decided that it was time to reopen the government. We have a 3-week extension here to allow Congress to negotiate some type of agreement. And of course, this gets the airports back to normal and things of that sort. I flew out of Newark on yesterday morning, and spoke to some TSA folks there. They indicated that their call out rate, which is the employees calling sick rate, which had been at 9% the previous Saturday, was back somewhere between 3% and 4%, which is what they said would be normal for a Saturday. So it didn't take even 24 hours for things to get back to normal. And of course, the thing that ultimately caused the quick end to the shutdown was the fact that on Friday there were staffing shortages of air traffic controllers at a Northeast air traffic control station here, which handles, among other airports, Philadelphia, LaGuardia, Newark. So it immediately caused a ground stop at LaGuardia, which means a ground stop means that no planes take off for the airport and no planes leave the ground at the airport. And Newark and Philadelphia were also impacted. And as we speculated, Tom, last Sunday when we had our friends Sid and Dale from the TSA on, as we speculated, the moment that this really got into the control tower or into the security situation or something like that, we suspected it would bring things to a fairly quick close. And that's exactly what happened. It shut down the shutdown within hours. Of course, this is only a 3-week extension, so we don't know what will happen at the end of those 3 weeks, but at least for now, we have a little bit of certainty when it comes to travel. And I think we also know something, Tom, that we suspected before, and that was that the air traffic control system can only take so much stress and strain. And when people started to call in sick in big numbers, why, that was pretty much the end of the game.
There you go. That always gets people's attention.
Speaking of things that are connected to the government shutdown that have to do with flying, if you thought that you were going to fly out of Payne Field north of Seattle starting February the 11th, which is what was scheduled with Alaska Air or United, unfortunately, that's not going to happen. The shutdown, with the FAA being hobbled by the shutdown, the February 11th date has been pushed back now. They hope that flights will launch out of Payne Field, which, of course, is where Boeing is, north of Seattle, sometime between March 4th and 12th. Southwest Airlines, too, of course, was impacted by the FAA inaction during the shutdown. It had planned to launch flights from Hawaii from the West Coast. That surely now is not going to happen in the first quarter. One would hope that it might happen. Southwest might take a shot at trying to get some planes in the sky to Hawaii by spring break. If they don't, then industry speculation is that they will wait for the summer, because one of the slowest times for folks to fly to Hawaii is between spring break and summer vacation. So it's kind of questionable as to whether or not they would try to launch something there. Speaking of Southwest Airlines, they are ending flights to Mexico City, which they just started a couple, 3 years ago. Not all Mexico destinations, but just Mexico City flights are going to end in the next few weeks. Thomas, are you a Popeye's chicken fan?
I kind of like Popeye's chicken. They make some good little chicken nuggets.
Yeah, and I kind of like their popcorn shrimp. Well, Popeye's at the Philadelphia International Airport has launched a promotion that gives its customers, if you ask for your chicken to go, you get your chicken in an emotional support chicken container.
And that looks like a chicken?
To be able, yes, absolutely, to be able to take on the airplane with you.
That's clever.
It's a Popeye's says it's been approved for customers to bring aboard all major carriers. The chicken provides comfort and nourishment during stressful air travel.
Very clever.
Then they went on to add, unlike other chicken, it's marinated in rural Louisiana spices for 12 hours and must be permitted to fly without restriction. A little bit of a commercial there. But if you're flying through Philadelphia, you can get your own support chicken. You know, sometimes, Tom, when celebrities fly, they try to do the disguise thing, or they try to kind of hunker down, you know, with the hoodie and the hat and stuff like that.
Right.
Seems as though Leonardo DiCaprio tried this, was flying through John F. Kennedy Airport last week with his girlfriend and happened to be flying commercial. And so gets up to TSA, apparently, and there's a little, I have a video of this, and I didn't put it online because you can't really see enough from the video. But anyway, Leonardo is wearing a hoodie and got his baseball cap pulled way down and stuff. You can't really tell it's him. Well, the TSA folks said, dude, we're going to have to see that the guy underneath that hoodie matches the people and the guy in the picture, or you can't get on the airplane. The government shutdown. One more government shutdown story here. United Airlines announced Friday morning, before the president announced that the shutdown was over Friday afternoon, that they would donate $1 million to a campaign called Feeding America, the Shutdown Response Fund. Feeding America is a national food closet charity, and they had created a special response fund for families, for getting food to families of federal employees who didn't receive paychecks during the shutdown. That would have included TSA and Homeland Security employees. United Airlines has gone ahead and made the donation anyway, because as they have pointed out, these folks don't have their paychecks yet, and so they are still in great need of, in some cases, of immediate assistance. And all of that back pay and stuff is not going to come for a while. And if you're somebody who is living paycheck to paycheck. So anyway, congratulations to United Airlines for adding their name to the list of companies that responded to help out folks get through that little tough spat there. And hopefully we will not have to go through this again in 3 weeks, Tom. Good grief. I can't imagine that. How would you like to have a federal job and you know, think, wow, I wonder what's going to happen 3 weeks from now?
Yeah, you know, it's got to be tough. And, you know, like most people, you don't anticipate it's going to happen. So you don't really stock away, you know, a couple of months' salary or whatever. Let's hope for the best.
Yeah, that's I'm listening. I'm hearing you, my friend. And that is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. And again, go to travelguysradio.com. We got some links to some of the stuff we're going to be talking about, particularly what we are up coming up next. Mark just visited the New York Times Travel Show, one of the biggest in the world. And we're going to start things off with a segment that's going to make you a smarter traveler. Luis, who has a backpack with him almost all the time, is going to find our next interview very interesting right here on The Travel Guys.
Wrapped around each other, trying so hard to stay warm.
It's Tom and Mark. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And every year, at least for the last, I don't know, three or four, I do believe, Mark Hoffman has taken the time to go all the way to New York City to the New York Times Travel Show. It is one of the biggest in the world. And there he wanders around and finds all kinds of great information and interviews folks to bring back to us here on The Travel Guys. So let's follow Mark, if you will, through the magic of radio as we now visit the New York Times Travel Show with Mark.
She's in charge.
Tom, Neil Varden is the CEO of a company called Cabin Zero, and I've walked around. Neil, I want to tell you here, I walked around the whole area and looked at all the different travel products that are on sale. There are lots of fancy suitcases and things like that, things that cost a lot of money. But I'm struck that yours is the most functional of anything here. You have some very unique and interesting backpacks. Tell me a little bit about your product.
Yeah, hi. We focus mainly on ultra-lightweight cabin-sized backpacks. So our core style is called a Classic, which is available in three sizes, 28, 36, 44 litre, and they all weigh less than 1 kilo. Sorry, I don't know what that is in pounds, but it's less than 750 grams. If you think most airlines give you 5 to 10 kilos carry-on limit, you know, we save the customer a lot of hassles.
And for our non-European listeners, all of the numbers that Neil is mentioning all fit within the legitimate carry-on bag sizes here in the U.S. International sizes are a little bit different and a little bit smaller in some cases. You have a variety of different products here. We should tell folks that we'll put a link to Cabin Zero at travelguysradio.com. It looks like you have a wide variety of backpacks and products. Give me some idea of pricing and stuff.
Okay, yeah. The pricing in dollars ranges from around $55, very, very cheap, up to around $170. It all depends what you want in terms of features. If you want something that's ultra lightweight, almost like a container, which is just like a shell inside, fully lined though, high quality. Or if you want something that has a bit more function with hideaway straps, a trolley sleeve, laptop pocket, iPad pocket, etc., then the price points go up.
What makes Cabin Zero's product more attractive to a traveler or a better choice than some of the other backpack products that are available?
That's a very good question. There's quite a few points, I would say. You know, they are functional, ultra lightweight, so they serve a purpose for many, many travelers that don't want to be burdened by a heavy backpack or a trolley that they have to drag around all the time. B, they're very high quality. We give over 25 years guarantee. We use customized materials. C, every bag has an Ockerband luggage tracker, which is a bit, a bit like a Tumi tracer. It's like a lost and found system.
So it's kind of like find your phone type thing.
Yeah,
you set your bag down someplace and
you've
left it behind, and it's a possibility that you may be able to get it back.
Yeah, yeah. It helps. It helps, definitely.
And you know, Neil, nowadays we see, 10 years ago in my tour groups, I saw the only people who were using backpacks were people under 40. And now I see almost, it doesn't matter the age. Most people have figured out that the best way to carry your stuff with you is to take a backpack with you. And it seems as though many of these, you have a variety of different sizes and obviously a variety of different functions here. What is your most popular product?
At the moment, still the Classic is the most popular product, and that is the most simple style, but in some ways the most functional because it is ultra lightweight. But that's available in three different sizes, and actually the sales rank depends on the region. So in Asia, 28, 36 liter are more popular than 44 liter. But in Europe, 44 liter and 36 liter are the most popular.
If you go to Travel Guys Radio, we'll have a link. Cabin Zero is the name of the company, and they have some very functional, very lightweight backpacks. Neil, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. Nice to meet you.
Cool. I've traveled often with a backpack. I kind of got away from it for a while, but, you know, I think I'm going back. Mark, you travel with a backpack frequently?
You know, Tom, I was a standard briefcase guy for a long time, and then I caved into the backpack thing a couple of years ago, and I really like it. It's easier than, I don't know, the whole man purse concept never really worked for me on any level or anything, seemed kind of weird. But a backpack seems like a perfect thing, you know, and you can put almost anything in a backpack. And these guys, Cabin Zero, and I really would encourage folks, they have some other things besides backpacks, but ultralight backpacks is really their thing. So you can, the link to the website is at travelguysradio.com. But the great thing about these that I noticed was they're really good quality backpacks. I kind of took one and kind of tried to tear it apart a little bit and rough it up and stuff like that. And they were kind of giving me a funny look at one point, but really, really well built and put together. This was kind of interesting this year, Tom. There's always a few travel products at the show, but this year there were fewer people with unique products.
Oh no, we've lost Mark momentarily. He's calling me on the phone here. I don't know what this is. Hold on, everybody. I'm going to talk to him. Hi, Mark. I'm talking to you on the radio. What's going on? Hello? Oh, are you there? Oh, we lost him here, too. Well, okay. See if you get him back, Louise. All right. You're listening to Mark and Tom. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. I know Mark had another little add-on news feature that he was going to bring up here. At the end of this particular break, before we go to the news at the bottom of the hour, and let's see, are we having any luck there? Do we got him back? Okay, Mark, are you back with me?
I am back.
That was really weird. You would have loved it from my end. Here I'm listening to you talk, and then all of a sudden, I'm either getting a text or I'm getting a phone call, but at the same time, I'm still hearing you on the air. Never mind. Welcome back.
As we were saying, these guys at Cabin Zero have some really good quality, really lightweight backpacks. The thing is, with some of the suitcases and stuff that are on the market, older suitcases, you know, they can weigh 6, 7, 8, 9 pounds, and then you've taken up a lot of your weight, or they're bulky. And because carry-on limitations are tight in the U.S., but in Europe, the size limitations, the whole length and width and all that stuff is a couple inches shorter. So in Europe, believe it or not, they enforce carry-on rules that they don't in the United States. So it really is important to have, especially if you're going to go internationally, to have a backpack. And remember, you want something that doesn't have, you know, a U.S. flag on it or something like that. You want something that makes you your ID somewhat generic.
Yeah, we talked about that some time ago, making sure that you don't have, you know, something on your either luggage or whatever that identifies you from being from a certain location. Why was that again?
Well, just because from a safety standpoint, you might be a little bit more targeted if you were a U.S. citizen than, you know, I know U.S. citizens for friends for years who have put Canadian flags on their backpacks and the like because they felt that made them a little safer. Hey, quickly here, Tom, before we get to the news, I forgot one thing in the travel news that I think is kind of significant. North Dakota is considering building a presidential library. So what president came from North Dakota? Teddy Roosevelt, a man who had a lot to do with the creation of the national parks. There is a Theodore Roosevelt National Park in North Dakota. This would be in Medora. So maybe there will be another presidential library. There are, about 10 or 11 presidential libraries already. So this one would be in North Dakota. So that would be kind of cool. So after the news, back to the New York Times Travel Show, my friend.
Yes, sir. What we'll do here coming up after the newscast, we're going to go to the San Juan Islands. We're going to spend some time in Tahiti and then off to Provincetown. So that's all coming up after the break. By the way, if you go to travelguysradio.com, again, links to all that we're talking about there, along with a bunch of other cool stuff. In fact, 13 of the weirdest things in Sky Mall catalog. You can drill in and find that. Let's see, Raft the Grand Canyon and 2 home exercises, and I know you've tried these, and you use them on a regular basis. 2 home exercises to treat vertigo. All right, all of that coming up next, right after the news here with the Travel Guys. Forget now, here every Sunday, 3 to 4, Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, thanks for joining us. Every year we visit the New York Times Travel Show, or should I say more correctly, Mark visits the New York Times Travel Show and sends some great interviews back to Tom. And we have him today. We'll rejoin Mark back there in Key Largo in just a bit. But while Mark was at the travel show, he wandered around and he rounded up some folks from the San Juan Island. Mark, what do you have for us?
Tom, I'm here with Barbara Merritt. She is with Communications in the San Juan Islands, which is in the Pacific Northwest, just not too terribly far from us in Sacramento. Barbara, we were just talking about what are two folks from the West Coast doing on the East Coast at the New York Times Travel Show, but you're here to create some awareness among people of what the San Juan Islands are all about.
That's right, and we were on the New York Times list of best places to go in 2019. So they picked Orcas Island for its incredible food scene, and also because Oprah just bought a house there. And we figure she has pretty good taste, but the San Juan Islands themselves were number 2 of places to go on the New York Times list in 2011. Wow. So the New York Times loves us, and so we decided to show a little support for them as well.
So for folks who have never been up in the Sound and never gone to the islands before, if you're traveling independently or you're traveling with a group, what are some of the things that people are going to want to do? And of course, it's important to know that one of the ways basically to get there is by ferry boat. boat, either that or by seaplane.
That's right. We say they're real islands, real close. So we have no bridges. So one of the best things about getting to the islands is riding the ferry where you can really relax. Or you can take a float plane or a wheeled plane right from downtown Seattle or from SeaTac Airport. So when people get to the islands, they experience just this chill vibe. They get to relax. It's an outdoor destination, so there's hiking, biking, kayaking. We have four lighthouses, two of which you can go inside. We also have incredible whale and wildlife watching. You can do that from shore or from a tour boat or even from a kayak. So there's lots to do. And one of the things that the New York Times called out was the tide-to-table scene. So we have three shellfish farms, and our restaurants, many of them have organic farms, and so the food that you're eating has just been plucked from the sea or picked out of a garden, and it's on the table within a couple hours.
So for people who are looking for kind of that realistic, that we use the word authentic a lot,
right,
a lot.
Yeah.
And we're standing here in front of, and the lavender smell is kind of wafting up to my nose here,
right,
from Belinda Lavender in on the island. So, I mean, on San Juan Island itself.
Right.
So there are lots of things to do in the islands, but what a great place to just go and kind of kick back for a week or so.
That's right. We say there's nature and nurture. So you can spend time in nature, you can have good food, and then you can be nurtured. We have some day spas that are lovely. There's a big healing community in the island, so if you want massage or acupressure, acupuncture, it's all there. We say it's the gathering of the tribes.
And you can even take a ferry boat to Victoria, which isn't a bad destination to throw into your trip there if you've got a passport.
Absolutely. There's wonderful connectivity with the Washington State Ferries, which is the largest ferry service in the country. So it's about an hour from the mainland to get to the San Juan Islands by Washington State Ferry, and then it's only another hour to get to Canada.
It's pretty amazing. The San Juan Islands, truly, the New York Times has decided one of America's most popular destinations for 2019. Of course, Barbara, that's probably something that we kind of already knew. The secret of the Pacific Northwest is not as great of a secret as it used to be.
No, it isn't. It's just a beautiful place to come year-round. And especially when other places are snowy or hot and humid, we have a very, very temperate climate.
Shh, don't go telling people here that all weekend, or there'll be too many people next weekend.
Right.
Barbara, thank you a little bit for your time.
Thank you very much.
Mark, being such a fan of the Pacific Northwest, to the San Juan Islands and all of that, it's just kind of like, feels like you were home there doing that interview.
It did. Of course, as she pointed out, this is the second time that one of the islands has made the New York Times best places to visit list. So they were pretty excited about that. But gosh, the San Juan Islands, if you have, you know, there are a lot of people who live in Sacramento and they say, gosh, I've never been to Yosemite, or I've never been to Catalina Island. I'm just trying to think of some destinations that are, you know, within an arm's reach that you could go to. You went just a couple of years ago up on the Oregon coast and said, wow, you know, if I'd have known that this was so awesome, I'd come here more. So
exactly.
The San Juan Islands is one of those places that really intrigued. Truly, you once you go there, you will say, how come I haven't been here before, and when can I come back here? Because there's lots to do, or it's a great place just to chill out.
And it's by all intents and purposes really close to us here in California. Now, the people on the East Coast, on the other hand, they got the South Pacific, they've got Tahiti, and you spent a little bit of time talking with someone about that as well. So let's take a listen.
Tom, I'm with Kristen Carlson, who is the managing director of Tourism Tahiti.
That is correct.
And one of the great, I would say still one of the great unknown West Coast destination tourism spots. Now you've got two airlines flying from the West Coast to Tahiti. Kristen, give me an update on Tahiti. For folks who love Hawaii, they love the islands, they just haven't made it quite that far yet, tell them why they should come to Tahiti.
Well, certainly, and not to correct you, but we actually have more airlift than ever. So, of course, from the Los Angeles, we have Air Titi Nui with a brand new Dreamliner fleet, and they fly daily or double daily. Also from LA, we have Air France, but very exciting this past year, United Airlines started service from San Francisco, and then a low-cost carrier, French carrier called French Bee. So both of these, all of these, are just 8 hours, either from Los Angeles and San Francisco, and with all the different airlines and their different alliance systems, it really has great feeders and hubs throughout the country. So yes, if you're used to just going to Hawaii, well, you just want to stay on that plane, have one or two more cocktails and a movie, and go to the islands of Tahiti. So many people know about Tahiti, Morea, Bora Bora, but we are actually 118 islands and atolls. So much to do. Again, sometimes people just think of that iconic, wonderful overwater bungalow in the pristine Blue Lagoon, which is wonderful, and in fact, the overwater bungalow was first built in the islands of Tahiti in 1967, so we're the home to them, whereas now you can find them in Jamaica or Mexico or other places in the Caribbean. But what makes ours unique is the culture you will experience when you step out your door, and that is the culture of mana in the islands of Tahiti.
Two major ways really to see the islands, either with a land package or by a cruise package. There are options for both. Why would you take one over the other? What would one offer over the other option?
Certainly. Well, my background, I've been with Tahiti Tourism since 2011. Prior to that, I worked for a cruise company for 13 years. So I actually have a great perspective. It depends. You know, if you're somebody who wants to just pack, unpack once, have the convenience of staying on the same accommodations every night, it's a wonderful value-packed experience on a cruise because you're not paying for individual meals and other entertainment, and you certainly have a wide choice of excursions.
But you can't fall in love with something too much because you have to move on the next day.
Move on, exactly. So by combining it with either ferry or air transportation between the islands and doing what you would refer to as a land package, you pick which activities, which islands you want to spend a little bit longer on. You may get a chance to meet some people, have a little bit more authentic interaction with the culture and the locals. And, you know, if you're on some beautiful hike and decide, oh my gosh, I see the tiare flower and the rainbow over there, I'm going to stay up here another couple hours, you don't have to worry about your ship leaving.
So perhaps a first-time visitor to get acquainted with the islands, a cruise might be a way to do that. Pick out your favorite spot and then you can head back for the return visit for an extended stay.
Yes, I think that is absolutely perfect.
Anything else that we should tell folks about Tahiti and Sacramento before we let you go?
Just again, that it is so close, just 8 hours from San Francisco or LA, and it is a great year-round destination, 80 degrees air and water temperature, so just hop on that plane.
Unique and authentic.
You got it.
Thank you, Christy.
Thank you.
All right, don't follow me to the East Coast to get to Tahiti, please. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. Anyway, I just had to point that out.
You just had that little epiphany there. Interesting, Tom. Before we go to the break here, and I know we have one more interview to get to after the break in Provincetown. And I don't mean this in a negative way at all, because I'm sure there's somebody out there listening in our audience whose job it is, and I interact with these people all the time. But when you wind one of these folks up who are destination specialists in their own area, and you let them go, I mean, if you don't stop them, they'll just go all around the room for a couple of hours. You know, I mean, they just keep on spitting it out there. It was interesting, though, the guy that we had with the backpacks talking. And if you're going to go to a travel show in the United States, my suggestion to you would be convert your thoughts to not liters and all of that stuff, but talk to us in pounds and things that we would know about, as opposed to, and that's how you can tell this is really live radio, because, hey, you know, I mean, it's all kinds of neat stuff.
You've been several times to the New York Times travel show. What have you seen? What did you see this year that is, is it changing anything? Is it different? What was out of the ordinary?
Yeah, it is, Tom. In a matter of 4 years, their attendance at the travel trade, if you're a travel consultant, somebody like Gwen Duncan or somebody like that, or you're like Mark Hoffman and you're a media person, that day the attendance has doubled in the last 4 years. So that's several thousand people. Their attendance keeps going up. They're up around 20,000 people to the 2 days for the public and about 7,000 for the media and travel professionals day. So it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. They are busting at the seams out of the part of the Javits Center that they use there in New York. And one thing I noticed this year, Tom, usually I can go in on the floor and in an hour and a half, I can get 7 or 8 interviews. This year, in order to get 4 interviews, took me almost 3 hours. So there was a lot more competition and a lot more people there. So the economy is booming, and you know, people have discovered that travel is really, I think, plays a bigger role in a well-rounded life than people used to put it 25 or 50 years ago.
All right. Well, we're going to follow the Travel Guys wandering microphone at the New York Times Travel Show to another location, Provincetown. That's coming up next.
When the big story breaks, depend on it. An iHeartRadio station. News Radio KFBK.
Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano every Sunday 3 to 4, the Travel Guys. And Mark, set this next one up for me, would you?
Well, we're headed out to Provincetown, and as we mentioned in the headlines, Tom, I
okay, well, with that being said, let's look, how did that happen? I have Mark on FaceTime. Hi, Mark. I don't know how this happened.
Are you still hearing me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you. Go right ahead, and you can just tell our listeners what's going on, and we'll go from there.
All right. So anyways, as we were saying, in a few years, we're going to be up against the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims arriving in Plymouth. But what some folks perhaps don't remember is that the Pilgrims, that their whole entourage, first landed out on the Cape at Provincetown and spent some time out there before deciding, I think, perhaps that maybe they could find better weather elsewhere, maybe a little bit further inland. But anyways, we talked to folks from Provincetown. There is a tremendous variety of things to do in Provincetown, and one of the things we talked about is how Provincetown is constantly reinventing itself.
Well, we're a very authentic place, and we're really a seaside village. We're on a beautiful harbor. It's one of the deeper harbors in the country. Our airline flies into one of two national parks that allow planes to land. So you land in the national seashore. So just from the very beginning of arriving into town, you come to find that it's just so unique and so different. But we don't have, we have very few national chains. Everything is really boutique and, mom and pop.
And you can, if you're going to P-Town, you can fly, of course, into Boston's Logan Airport. And then, as you mentioned, they could quick hop over on Cape Air. Or you can, my favorite way to arrive in Provincetown really is to arrive on the ferry boat from Boston.
Yep.
Because it's very picturesque if you get any kind of decent weather. It's a beautiful, arriving in Provincetown on a boat feels like, you almost feel like a pilgrim.
Yeah.
You know?
And we are the place of the Pilgrim's first landing.
Yeah. The big anniversary is coming up, and people are going to talk about all of this stuff that happened in Plymouth 500 years ago. But before it happened in Plymouth, they made a stop before they got to Plymouth.
They made a very important first landing. We have a wonderful place called First Landing Park, and we also have the Pilgrim Monument and Provincetown Museum. So there's a lot of really rich history, and people have just been attracted to our shores for 400 plus years.
If you're coming back for the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims and you're going to Plymouth Rock, then Provincetown is definitely a place you want to be. Tell us a little bit, Robin.
And you do get a wonderful opportunity to learn about the Wampanoag Indians who were there forever.
long time before the Pilgrims. Talk a little bit about some of the special events that you have in Provincetown.
So we have four dedicated women's weeks in Provincetown. We have Women's Week, which is always in October and is a fantastic week packed with lots of events. We have an event Memorial Day weekend. We have Women of Color weekend, which is the first weekend of June, and Single Women's Week. And then we also are celebrating Pride for the second time this year with a very special art installation called The Global Rainbow. And it's a wonderful international artist who does 20-mile-plus-long military-grade lasers that form a rainbow. And it's called, her name is Yvette Matern, and it's called The Global Rainbow. And if you can come the first weekend in June for our Pride, it's really a wonderful experience.
Awesome, awesome. Provincetown, we will put a link to the Business Guild at travelguysradio.com. So if you're thinking about heading that direction, you can get some more information. Robin, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I hope to see you in Provincetown.
There we go. And, I can hear the jet airliner heading all the way back to California here, coming back from the New York Times travel show. Of course, Mark is in Key Largo. We've been having some issues with our connection today, aren't we, Mark?
We're having some fun. Yeah, we really are. We'll hope we can get through the last 5 minutes here. A couple of tips. If you're going to Cape Cod and you're going to include Provincetown in your stay, make sure you allow yourself 3 or 4 days. Provincetown is an end-of-the-road destination. You can't go any further than that, but there are plenty of things to do there, and it is also kind of a, like the San Juan Islands, it's kind of a kick back and make sure you give yourself enough time. Of course, there's Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard and Hyannis and all kinds of other places to see there on the Cape, but to make sure that you allow yourself plenty of time in Provincetown. There's a great little hotel about a half a mile from the center of town called the Surfside. Not real fancy, but a great place to stay. Also a suggestion, if you're going to Provincetown and you can do so, avoid the weekends, because you're going to find that the folks from Boston head over on the weekends, and the room rates and everything, the restaurants are a lot more crowded, and it's a lot tougher to get into things over there. And of course, next year, 2 years away, they'll be having a big celebration. Speaking of celebrations, Tom, a lot of stuff happened in 1969. And the reason I say that is because this is the 50th anniversary of Woodstock.
Summer of Love.
Yeah, it's the 50th anniversary of another large concert that was on the West Coast. Was that the... you're an American. Yeah. It's the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, which was the beginning of the fight for civil rights for the LGBT community in New York City. So there are a lot of things going on. So if you're going out traveling, make sure that you do your homework and find one of those 50-year-old celebrations, particularly if you are someone who was around during that time. Okay, a couple of quick recommendations for New York City before we go here, Thomas, because I was there earlier this week, had a chance to see the show Pretty Woman on Broadway. This is not the first rendition of Pretty Woman to be on the Great White Way, but this is a very good rendition. If you can get a ticket and see it, I think you will enjoy it. Again, it's one of those things, it's adult themed, so do your homework. Make sure you know what you're going to see ahead of time. And I have a hotel suggestion for you if you're going to New York City. Hotels in New York are rather ridiculously priced. Two things. Be careful with a lot of the newer hotels. They are box hotels. The rooms are a little smaller in the brands that you're used to, and they're crammed into funny places, and you may find yourself disappointed in what you thought was a great room rate. But if you're willing to spend a few dollars, the Hilton on 42nd Street between 7th and 8th Avenues is a great place to stay. It's really a tourist hotel. All the rooms are pretty standard. Fairly reasonably priced, and you're on 42nd Street, so you're only a few blocks from all kinds client from the theater district. You're on the edge of Times Square. You've got the Times Square subway station up the street. So my suggestion for a hotel in New York City is the Hilton Times Square, which is on 42nd Street between 7th and 8th Avenues.
You know, I would think that, you know, if you're going to go to a destination like New York City, you don't want to necessarily try to avoid the crowds, avoid all of the stuff that's really happening, but try to be right in the heart of it. It would seem to make more sense.
Well, and it's you want to be in the heart of it without being run over by it. So you want to have a place that you can escape to, and you make a good point. You want a hotel room where it is quiet and it's away from things, so that when you're done squeezing every dollar you can out of your New York day, that you've got a place where you can go to and get a little rest and be ready to go the next day.
Well, I'll tell you what, New York is on my short list. I've yet to be. A lot of folks have. I know you practically live there. And it's time for the wife and I to take off. Last question, what's the best time of the year to visit New York City?
You will find the best prices and the best availability at this time of the year. But as somebody, it was pretty cold there Thursday and Friday, and I guess on Monday it was like the coldest day in the last decade. So it can be really cold, and people from California, I have found over the years, Tom, don't do two things well: humidity and really, really, really cold weather.
Yeah, that be me. Well, okay. Hey, next week on the Travel Guys, we're going to dip into the Travel Guys mailbag, answer those questions that you've sent in. Going to be some good stuff. Mark, you have a safe trip home.
Thank you. You all dance like nobody's watching, and we'll see you next week at 3 o'clock.